Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Sue Savage-Rembar is our guest. Bill Russell's here. We went away talking about expectations. Well, parents understand expectations. You expect a kid to do right, they're much more likely to do right than if you don't, right?
That's exactly right. And certainly the same is true of apes. The expectancy...
Like what? Expectancy sounds like a scientific word. Talk to me about what do you expect of an ape, and tell me why you think this. You must have evidence that
Initially, we didn't expect that they could understand language. The reigning scientific theory was you can't understand a sound unless you can make that sound. And because apes couldn't make human sounds, we assumed that they could not understand human sounds. Even though they begin to show many signs of doing it, we put out forth a great effort to teach them
To teach them
special printed words, assuming that they couldn't understand the speech that we were making.
For years you did this.
For years I did this.
As have others.
And we would not speak to them as though they understood, because we assumed that they couldn't understand. And by not speaking to them as though they understand, they don't learn to understand. When you speak to them from a very early age as though they understand, even almost at an adult level, as though they understand, they somehow come to understand.
Boy, that's
and
a
to
life
respond.
Lesson right
I,
there,
I will
isn't
say,
it?
I'm reminded of being in a foreign country and using my absolutely atrocious French, speaking very loudly so they will understand me. And only to discover that the person speaks perfect English. And, you know, you go through this elaborate, you know, trying to communicate, and then finally they fess up. And it sounds, in a way, like, you know, these these chumps have to be sitting back with their arms folded saying, you know, what's going on here?
Well, that's certainly true. When somebody comes in that doesn't talk to them in that way, they feel very talked down to. But it needs to be said that you can't just go in at any age and start talking to them as though they understand. You have to do this when they're very small and the brain is still growing and developing very rapidly. If you try to do this with a 3- or 4-year-old, for example, we've tried with Kanzi's mother, Matata, and she still doesn't seem to be able to understand what I'm saying, although I've talked with her now for 20-some years.
But
she listens
with
and
her,
she tries.
She does try to understand you?
She does try to understand, yes.
And so you started with her when she was what?
She was 7 when I first started talking with her. But at that time, I was not talking as though she understood.
We've moved from mind and mind to language, which is even a more controversial, I'm sure. Now it gets ugly, I would think. Your experience indicates what you're saying is that these apes do understand language and are able to use language
in much the same way that we do.
I will say, in looking at some of the training techniques, it is amazing. I mean, if we put humans through the process that you put these apes through to learn language, I'm not sure any of us would learn language the old way, using essentially the stimulus and response. I'm simplifying. But the original ways that you were trying to conform to the expectation of the scientific community, I don't know anyone, that any of us would speak a language.
No, I don't think we would. Not only given the expectations of the scientific community can we not teach language that way, we can't even teach simple things like conditioned discriminations. I recently learned that there was a task given to a number of soldiers in the Army that was also given to, say, animals, like birds or cats or something like that. And when one light goes on, you press the left red button, and when the other light goes on, you press the right green button. And they gave this test to 100 soldiers, and none of them passed it without language to tell them that that's what they were supposed to do. Except one fellow, and they asked him how he passed it, and he said, well, you go left, left, right, right, left, left. And
well,
so he still hadn't
pattern.
Learned the linguistic rule. But that shows you the power of language. It shows you what you can do in what appears to be a very simple situation by a few words to tell another individual, hey, this behavior will work for you. And that's something we can clearly do with the bonobos that understand language. You can sit down and you can say, well, this is a puzzle, and this is how you work it. This is what you do with a joystick to make your puzzle operate on the television, for example. You can take another ape who probably has certainly the intelligence to do this, but you can't explain to them because you have no language. And they can work for years and not be able to do it, not because they don't have the intelligence, but because you didn't have the key to tell them what the goal of your task was. that's back to how mind operates, what common sense is. Language is sort of the home of the mind, and it's how we trade pieces of mind back and forth and how we learn to coordinate our behavior.
And it sounds like you're saying context is very important, not only context, but relevant context in learning and using language. Is that a fair statement?
That's true. When you're raising your children or when I'm interacting daily with Kanzi and Panbanisha, I have to talk about things that are happening right now. We heard a noise out in the woods. I'm talking about noise. I'm looking out. I'm saying, would you like me to go check out that noise? That makes sense to them in the context where we've both looked out and we've both heard the noise. We're processing the whole implications of that context. So when I overlay some words on it, it makes sense. But if you had those words in isolation, they would make no sense. And that's what scientists typically try to do. They try to teach words in isolation as though the meaning was somehow packed inside the word and had nothing to do with anything else. And this is a big, terrible mistake. We think because we can look up words in a dictionary that the meanings reside in the words, not in the interactions between the people. And that's a big mistake.
Well, and we see this in corporate environments, the tendency to mistake the medium, the exchange of, you know, the flow of data, words, pick whatever you will, with communication. And if there's not something going on at both ends, there is no communication.
I'm going to risk taking this way beyond where you want me to, but what I'm hearing you say as you talk about this context and the words packed is that the communication exists in the relationship within a larger context. And I can take that then to say, gosh, you know, that applies to everything. We are in relationship to not only to I to you and you to the bonobos, but we to the planet where the bonobos are threatened. That relationship all of a sudden becomes everything. And if we're so committed in our scientific straitjacket to packing the information into this word that without context and relationship doesn't do anything, we're in trouble.
Right. If in any normal conversation we don't have a good relationship with the other party, as you can say, many words can be traded back and forth, even written pieces of paper, such as between myself and Chomsky, can be traded back and forth.
Mm-hmm. And Chomsky is Noam Chomsky, who is the leader of a specific part of the linguistic community, and there's lots of controversy around him. How'd I do, guys?
Good. And when that happens, there is no real communication. So you have to have a relationship. And when you have whatever a relationship is, that means you are processing the information around you, the events that have just happened, the events that are probably going to happen. You're interpreting those from a common framework.
And it's lot more than just the words.
It's a lot more than just the words. You're making sense out of the world from a common framework. And when you do that, you need very few words to be exchanged between you for a lot of information to actually flow, because most of the making sense is from your joint knowledge and your joint common way of processing things. This is why people from different cultures have trouble getting along. This is why people can't just walk right in with the bonobos, because they're not processing a whole range of events in the same way. So that's the stuff that a relationship is made of, and that's the stuff that a joint interpretation of reality is also made of.
I want to go a minor digression, but I think it helps put what you're doing in a slightly different context. Humans learn language very readily, almost mysteriously, when they're very young. If anybody's ever learned a foreign language, you know, after you're young, it's extraordinarily difficult. You have done work with young people. Based on the work you've done with the primates, you have done work with people who are retarded or have some sort of mental, how to say, communication handicap, and apparently have had some success using what you have learned from the chimpanzees in helping these young people learn to communicate. Tell us about that.
Well, that work has been mostly done by Dr. Marian Romsky and Dr. Rose Sevcek, who've worked for many, many years trying to apply the kinds of concepts we've learned with Kanzi to work with children that are mentally retarded. I personally have been so bound up with the apes that I can speak of this work only by report. But one of the things that we have seen is very simple. Many children that are retarded can't form sounds correctly. They talk in a very difficult way, and they may know what they're saying. Like when Kanzi vocalizes to me and he goes, ah! And he knows what he's saying, mm-hmm. and he expects me to understand. But I can't. I'm at a loss. I can't really process his information. Well, he does that because he's a bonobo, and his vocal tract makes him do that. A child that's retarded may not have the cognitive capacity or the vocal tract capacity to make a clear sound. So they're at a disadvantage that way. And they try to talk to people, and people count them out. They don't talk back. They don't talk to them as though they understand. If you give them something as simple as the keyboard that Kanzi uses with these symbols on them, and you hook that up to a speech synthesizer, then if I'm a child that is retarded and I punch banana or I need to go to the bathroom, that comes out and you can hear it and you know what I've said. And it's amazing how just sensing that a child can do this will make a person open their eyes and say, wait a minute, this child, there's somebody home. Yeah. There's a light bulb on. Yeah. I better change completely how I'm talking to this child. Even if they don't really have very many words and can't say very many things, the fact that they can do anything deliberately on purpose radically changes how the whole family, the church, the school, everybody treats that child, and then that child starts to blossom. So it's kind of just like opening the envelope.
It changes the context.
Changes the rules.
And it gives them a tool to operate in that changed context, which gives them motivation, and it sounds as if you've had remarkable success doing that. I raise that because, you know, it's easy to think of this research and, you know, happening in a lab someplace. It doesn't matter. It has no real-world implications. We'll get to that, I'm sure, after this break.
When we come back after a break, this is the Paula Gordon Show. We are with Sue Savage-Rumbaugh at the Georgia State University Language Research Center. Bill Russell's here. We're going to be right back. Stay with us.